position. There's no question for that. Those two had been running close to side by side at the exit of turn number two.
For the PPG Cup. Look, oh, look at that. Here he comes. And he gets him. Can he get him back? Can he hang on?
Does he make it? They have contact. Now returning. Oh, yes, they stuff each other. They take each other out of the race. Neither one would give.
Who's going to win it? Oh, Hardy's won it. Hardy's took it. Can you believe that? Hardy's took it at the finish line.
Welcome to another Planet IRL podcast for kicking off the month of May. Now that we are in May, we can break out our Indianapolis cliches. So, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you, wherever and whenever you may be listening. This is IndyCar editor Paul Dalby, joined again this week by Steph, and welcoming back our old friend Cole, who has been on high school sabbatical lately, I guess.
Thanks. So thanks a lot for that.
Yeah, no problem. So welcome to both of you guys.
Thanks, Paul.
Good to be back.
Let's start with last week's race at Kansas. I had predicted before the race that based on recent history, it was A, going to be a fairly boring race, B, that Ganassi would probably run away with it, one of the two. In this case, it turned out that Dixon backed up his performance from last year and pretty much ran away with the race. Now, from what I've heard from a lot of people that were there, and I use the term a lot of people because I've only heard from a handful and there were only a handful there, the race itself appeared to be better in person than what we got on TV. It seems ABC kind of missed the boat on some of their broadcast coverage again.
So that's been a consistent complaint for the last little while, actually.
I would agree. I think a lot of people are saying that the broadcasts are not coming across very well.
Mm-hmm. Somebody needs to figure out what's happening with that.
Well, they come across, I think it's an ABC thing. The races seem to come across fairly well on Versus.
Well, you know,
you kind of lose some of the luster.
I hate to say that. Well, and Versus last year was a first year operation, so I think that this year, I'll confess, I don't get Versus, so I don't see the coverage. But we don't like to say bad things about them because they've been good friends of the site. But overall, last year I found that at the races that I attended, I would think that the race was great and then get home and have people complaining that it was terrible and wondering where the disconnect was. And that was happening with the ABC and the Versus races. It doesn't seem to be happening as much with the Versus races anymore, but it wouldn't surprise me to find out that the ABC ones are still having the same issue, definitely.
I will say, in ABC's defense, though, that they have gotten better about one thing, and that's the Danica cam. They don't just follow her and say when she's in 20th place three laps down anymore. They are showing other people, and she only comes into play when she's on the on-track action.
And I would love to know who's responsible for that shift, whether it's ABC or the league requesting that of ABC or some combination of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was very concerned after the St. Pete race, because we did see some of that Danica stuff. Oh, look, she's up to 18th place now. She's three laps back. Oh, she's on off pit sequence, so now she's up to 7th place or whatever. But you're right, Cole. We didn't see much of her race this weekend, except for what we'll get to later when she was a preceding Elio, shall we say, for the lap.
That's the most politically correct way you could verse that, Paul. That was very nice.
We know that there's an issue with that coming across, and obviously that doesn't help sell the race by any means. And we saw the ratings come out yesterday. 0.8, not bad. It's not as good as they had hoped. The sponsors still want something above a 1.0, somewhere in the 1.5 ballpark. 0.8 isn't as bad as they could be. It's not the 0.2s and 0.3s we were seeing last year, so...
And let's be honest, the on-track product wasn't exactly riveting enough to draw people in that were flipping by accident.
Well, not only that, but it was also on a Saturday afternoon.
That's
which
true.
Is not a strong time for pulling race coverage.
Do you know what the average NASCAR rating is?
Oh, we don't ask that question, Cole.
I just want to ballpark to see how far we've come and see how
the Nationwides are at like 3.5.
Oh, they're not that high. They're probably in the 2.
Well, okay, Danica's Nationwide was 3.5.
Right. Okay. I think a typical cup race is in the 3 to 3.5, I would guess.
I thought they were higher than that, so I think we're doing better than we were last year, obviously.
I don't think that's true. Toronto pulled a 1 last year on ABC.
Well, I mean, I remember times when it was like 0.4.
Yeah, you're talking about versus,
you're talking
about
versus
though.
Races, yep.
Yeah. Well, that was a combination of the two.
And if we...
So, yeah, but the bottom line is the races, just particularly on ABC, are not transferring over the excitement from the on-track action to the television. And whether that's a producer's issue or whether that's someone, you know, let's be honest, I'm not a big fan of the broadcast crew. I don't think they do much to bring excitement to the broadcast either. So, some combination between
them. At the same time, are we really saying that Kansas was... I mean, you're a little biased, Paul. Let's be honest. You were gonna love this race no matter how boring it was, because you were...
No. I started off by saying that I thought it was
It was dull. It was dry as toast. The whole thing. It was terrible. And this has been a consistent problem with oval races in the last couple of years.
That's not completely fair.
That's a
fair.
Little overstated there.
That's a little bit much.
Okay.
Kansas has never been good. Look at Chicago and Kentucky.
You can't hang the entire oval hat on those two tracks. But yes,
Richmond,
those two have been
before
good.
The final year was good.
Kansas hasn't been good since 06.
Yeah.
Everything's been a stinker at Kansas, even before there was the aero issues a couple years ago. I'm not ready to write off the ovals yet, because we saw last year at Kentucky and Chicago that they were pretty good.
We just need to get more like that. That's the problem.
Let's ask this of Paul, Mr. Oval Expert. So why, what is it about Chicago and Kentucky that give us races that are worth watching, and we've got seven other, well, I mean, and IMS is IMS, but we've got five other oval tracks on the schedule that don't give us the same product. Why?
I don't know. It's something about Kansas that just hasn't raced well for the last several years. I don't know.
It's
if
not
it,
just Kansas, though. We're talking about Homestead.
Homestead's never
terrible.
Yeah. Homestead, the configuration just doesn't lend itself to side-by-side racing. Neither does Japan. Neither one of those are tracks that really give you the side-by-side racing that we have grown accustomed to seeing. Just their configurations don't lend to that. But if you look at the three or four, you know, D-shaped ovals you have left, you have Kansas, Kentucky, Chicago. What did I forget? Texas. So you got those four. We saw the two last year were the two final ones at Kentucky and Chicago were good after the aero changes came back. Texas was just an anomaly. I think that one will be back this year. It'll be good. But you have to go all the way back to 2006 before you get a good race at Kansas. It could be that it's just the first oval race of the year. Keep in mind, these guys hadn't been on an oval since October, and they hadn't been on a D-shaped mile-and-a-half oval since the end of August at Chicago. You had four drivers that had never run on an oval that all fared very well, but they weren't.
I was going to say, I didn't see them causing any problems.
No,
they
not
were
at all.
Very well.
But I'm just saying that they don't have the experience. They weren't going to be able to just jump right in. And I think it really takes just a few. It takes some miles every year to get back in the swing of things, of doing things on the ovals. Since Kansas moved to the spring, I think in 07 was the first year they ran in the spring, and that's been a terrible race ever since then. Now they did used to run the Miami race, the Homestead race, to start the season. Up until last year was the first year that it didn't, so they did have oval experience before that. But I don't know, maybe moving the race to the spring is, for whatever combination of factors, that could, whether it's coincidence or not, that's when the racing at Kansas really started to suffer, is when we went to a spring race there. So whether it's the weather, whether it's the lack of oval experience prior to that race every year, I don't know. But that track is almost in that exact identical configuration to Kentucky, with the straight, Chicago has a little curve in the back straight, and Kentucky is straight. We saw good racing at Kentucky. I don't know what the banking difference is, but
it's pretty. Kentucky's really flat and really bumpy.
Okay. Yeah, but so even you lower the banking, but you still get a pretty good race there. So I don't know what the answer is with Kansas. The other problem that is going on with Kansas is not only is the racing bad, the promotion is non-existent out there. You know, people have said if they had 20,000 there this weekend, that's probably generous. But you know, the guys on the radio, you know, Matt Archuleta says, you know, you went there and unless you happened to be driving by the track, you didn't know anything was going on at the track.
Mm-hmm.
So that certainly doesn't help the atmosphere of the event either.
No, and I believe that League is aware of that issue and is examining that as one of the factors of what tracks they're looking at going back to in the 2011 season.
Right. I would, at this point, I'd be shocked if the IndyCar Series returns to Kansas next year.
Especially getting shifted to Saturday.
I'm sorry?
Especially being shifted to Saturday in favor
and
of the
carrying
truck.
The appearance of, yeah, being
support
a
series.
Backup race for
right.
The
well, hopefully, you know, that was the downside of being on ABC this weekend. You know, ABC mandated that change, really.
I don't buy that, actually. I really think they set it up purposefully that the trucks would be the lead series that weekend.
Who did?
Whoever was in charge of making that schedule. Do we know, was the attendance
whoever
at the
was
truck...
in charge of making what schedule?
This
On the track side?
Yeah.
Who Hang on, I'm going to go get my tinfoil. One second.
Well, the easiest way to tell who got, you know, prime billing is, I haven't seen a picture looking down the start-finish line, but who had the big logo in the grass that was right at the start-finish line?
I'm pretty sure the IndyCars did.
Yeah, that's the IndyCar series, and that's the promo event of the weekend.
Does anyone know what the crowd was like at the truck race?
I've heard it was no better.
No better?
I wouldn't say it was worse, but I've heard that it was not better.
Yeah. Well, going back to the actual racing side, I think one problem I heard a lot of this weekend was the wind at the track. Every time, and the way it was blowing across from turn to turn didn't help it, but every time they would go down into, I think it was two, it would just push the car right up the track. So if you were beside someone, it would just throw you off. And I think that's brought into, that brought us to the issue we have with Sarah Fisher and Jay Howard crashing. You
what
just,
is that
you,
the problem? Wasn't that a really bad problem with the lights race last year as well?
Yeah. That's, they had cars upside down because of it.
Yeah.
Maybe they should, I don't know how you would fix that, but I think it's something that,
well, it's another byproduct of running there in the spring. You're running
in Kansas
April,
where there's nothing to stop.
Tornado Alley.
Yeah.
What do you expect? You're going to get storms there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not a surprise. Wait till NASCAR picks up that date, you know, gets their second cup race there next year. They'll understand. Then they'll probably end up doing something like NASCAR already does at Michigan, where they have two races within 6 weeks of each other there. You know, and they put them in the late, probably sometime in the late summer, I guess. I don't know when NASCAR's date is there right now, but I would
assume. They have one in the Chase, I think.
They are in the Chase, okay.
Yes.
So that has to be, you know, late September, I would guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could go back to what I've been saying for a lot of years and just run a Cup IndyCar weekend there in the spring. That would draw.
That's not going to happen.
Never going to happen.
Well, they need to work on it. I didn't say it was going to happen. I said I want to see it.
I'd rather see it at Phoenix myself. But.
So, that's my idea.
All right, let's quit belaboring the boring race point, and let's get to what Steph is dying to talk about right now.
Actually, I'm dreading this conversation because I'm going to get angry. I know I am.
I think the three of us have been foaming at the mouth to talk about this for the last couple hours, actually.
Steph, why don't you kick it off? You wrote the article about this.
All I did was I set out the etiquette that has been part of racing since basically the beginning of racing time. So the articles on planetirl.com, it's called Move Over, It's Just Good Manners. But here's a brief summary. You can race for your own position, and you can race to stay on the lead lap, but don't race people that are on a different lap than you. It doesn't serve any purpose. And all you do is you hold up the guy who's going faster than you and wants to get past you to be a part of a legitimate fight. So, therefore, if a car comes up behind you that is on the lead lap and you are not, You are to do everything within your power to get out of that car's way as quickly and safely as possible. And the onus is on you to do that. But, and this is a point that's come up separately a couple of times, if a leader comes up on a battle for position, the leader still is entitled to be given consideration to get by as quickly as possible, but the leader also has to give some concession to the fact that these cars that are battling are not going to want to concede to let the leader by, while if it causes them to lose ground in the battle that they're fighting. And so the car that's trying to get past needs to have an understanding and an allowance of that as that's going on. This is just, I don't understand why this is even an argument. I don't understand why everybody keeps saying that the leaders are whining and that this is just the way it's always been. Or at least it's the way that it used to be, and I don't know when it stopped being this way, because there are obviously cars on the track now that don't understand it. And I don't know when this shift took place, but it's just etiquette, it's a safety concern, and it's just common sense.
Paul?
Let me start with where I agree with you. If you are down laps, you should not be racing the leader.
Why does it have to be laps? People keep saying, oh, if they're just down one lap, then fine.
Well, if they're getting lapped.
Yeah, I mean, if they're getting lapped, yes, that's what I said.
Right, and that, hence the reason I'm addressing this after I prefaced it and said this is where I agree with you.
Yeah, okay.
So if you're on the lead lap and you're about to be lapped, you have every right to fight for that lap. If you're already a lap down and you're about ready to go your second down lap down, get out of the way. I agree there. Now, where I start to disagree with you is where if I'm battling for position with somebody, yes, I agree that you need to be cognizant that the leader is behind you. I wouldn't go so far as you say that you need to get out of the way as safely as possible, whenever possible. I would say you need to make sure that you're not blatantly blocking the leader.
That's a pretty semantic difference.
No, it's not, because
the onus
you're suggesting
on
that
to let
that
the leader by whenever they can, but the leader needs to have some understanding that whenever they can is not going to come as quickly because they're concentrating on the battle that they're in the middle of.
Exactly.
The leader always has the right of way.
Yes.
To who?
You get out of the leader's way. It doesn't matter if you're a lap down, you're battling, you move. You let the leader through, and you let the cars that are with him on the lead lap through, and then you continue your battle when there's no risk.
I don't buy that. The leader does not have some magic wand that he gets to wave and say, just let me by, I don't care if you're racing for position or not.
He does. It's called the blue flag. You get out of the way.
No, the blue flag...
They get out of the way when it's reasonable and safe to do so. There is a certain amount of concession to be made for not requiring cars that are battling for position to relinquish an advantage or a disadvantage or even a spot just to let the leader by. They have their own race that they are racing at that point, and that needs to be taken into account.
Right. Now, if the leader is truly faster, they should be able to get by. Which brings us really to the great irony of this whole subject is that, you know, people are complaining that, really where the genesis of this is that the cars now are so even that it's very difficult to get by. We saw that a lot. Really, last year at Richmond was the prime example where it took, you know, Ed Carpenter was the last car on the lead lap, and it took Dixon like 20 laps to get past him.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, as we're saying everyone's going too much the same speed, people are complaining about Milka because she's going too slow. But to me, it just seems ironic, and it's an ironic twist of thought there. But anyway, back on the whole blocking thing. I don't agree that the leader gets a free pass when lapping someone just because they're the leader. So I do disagree with you a bit there.
No, I don't think we disagree. I think we're just saying it in different ways.
Probably. I think you're taking it a little bit further than I am, but I think in general we do agree there.
If a car is by itself and a leader comes up behind, like... It's not an oval track example, but this is where this whole thing started with the Alex Lloyd and Justin Wilson thing. If a faster car is coming up behind, a car is by itself and has no reason to not let that car by, then it needs to move over as soon as possible.
True, but Alex was on the lead lap in that instance.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't?
No, he had just been lapped by Ryan Hunter-Reay. He spent, like...
Yeah, because Justin was P2.
Oh, that argument. Okay, I was talking about
when he
was battling with Ryan Hunter-Reay.
Yeah,
sorry.
He held up Ryan Hunter-Reay for a good long while, but he was racing to stay on the lead lap. That's fine. There's no issue with that. The problem was when he came over and clipped Justin's wing, and everybody was saying, you know, it was Justin's fault because he wasn't patient enough, or they were both at fault. And my stance was that it was Alex's fault because he should have been aware that Justin was coming up behind him, and it was on him to get out of Justin's way.
And we already beat this horse to death.
We did.
I said I disagreed because, you know.
Well, then let me throw this.
You said he needs to get out of the way in a safe and efficient manner. That doesn't mean slam on the brakes as soon as the first leader comes by so the rest of the train can go by. We already disagreed on that subject.
I think that's what I was implying. But okay. Cole, you had something to add?
I was going to say, since we've kind of cemented our views on this, what do you guys think about restarts? Do you support
gosh.
Because I have an idea about this. Okay.
Everybody wants to mess with the restarts. There's nothing wrong with the restarts.
Yeah, when there are 10 cars between the leader and second place, there is.
No, there's not. Was there 10 cars between the leader and second place before the yellow flag came out?
Absolutely. And the leader's already losing enough of an advantage when the
exactly.
Yellow flag, so because they're losing their time advantage. Keeping those 10 cars is the only advantage that the leader gets to keep.
But why should we give the leader an advantage?
Because the leader had to lap those
The leader's in the lead. He has enough of an advantage.
No, he doesn't.
Here's what I'm saying.
That is stupid, Cole. Sorry.
Well, you haven't even heard the point yet, so you have
no idea
what
I don't need to hear anymore.
Well, you're going to hear it anyways, and I like it, so just listen. I'm not one of those people who says put the lap cars to the back. Do the old NASCAR style, put the lap down cars on the inside row. Keep the lead lap. I'm not finished yet. Put the lead lap cars in the outside line. That way, the second place car can't just shoot past the leader. There's still traffic to cut through. That way, the lap down cars are in the right order, and the lead lap cars are in the right order. And it would have helped Kansas if the leaders would have been restacked on restarts instead of being separated by all the slow cars.
It would have helped if the second place driver would have been within 4 seconds of the leader.
He could have done something more than what he was doing.
If that yellow flag doesn't come out, Dixon just walks away even further. It's not like you lost anything.
You lost on-track action, which is the whole point of...
There wasn't any on-track.
There would have been more if you would have stacked the leaders.
I will never, ever, ever support any change to a rule that fabricates artificial action on the track.
That is not artificial at all.
It is so.
No,
you're
it isn't.
You're taking away an advantage that the leader has earned by passing
those lap
cars.
Why don't you stack them up and give them the same gap they had before the yellow if you're going to be like that?
Cole, you're one step short of saying that you need a competition yellow with 20 laps to go and just pull everyone out of the...
Why don't we just instill a green-white checkered rule while we're at it?
Why don't we just disqualify everyone that's already a lap down?
We, on the green-white checker thing, don't do that, but inside of 10 laps... Do not allow caution laps to count, because this weekend at Kansas...
There were four cautions,
and there were 33 laps of caution for four cautions!
That is another problem.
That's another issue, I agree.
The caution periods in this series, for some reason, are taking way too long right now.
They are apocalyptically too long.
But that's nothing to do with
Twitter lap race.
This discussion. That's a separate issue that needs to be dealt with separately.
Someone brought it up, so I'm going to bring it up.
All right, Cole, let's say 30 laps to go, Dixon has a 5-second lead, or whatever he had on Dario, and there are four cars between them. If there's no yellow flag, is Dario just going to fly by those other four cars and all of a sudden be right on Dixon's tail?
Precisely.
It doesn't matter what he can do, it's helping him because obviously the
car already helping
him.
Cars.
Why do we need to help Dario? He's already getting enough of an advantage because the yellow happened to come out. Why do we need to help him anymore?
Because the cars are crap and they can't pass because IndyCar doesn't know how to design a formula and keeps
it... Well, Dixon was able to get past these cars and put them between he and Dario, was he not?
Well, when Dixon's 4 seconds a lot faster, stack the cars on
third
to win.
You're not making any sense, Cole.
You are turning this to NASCAR.
There needs to be a change on restart.
No, there doesn't.
Getting the lap cars out of the way.
Oh. No, there does not need to be a change. please stop messing with my racing.
No one's messing with it. That's the problem. It's crap.
The reason that it's crap has nothing to do with these rules. The reason that it's crap, like you said, is that these cars are 7-8 years old, and everybody has tweaked them to the edge. The engines are capped. All they do is run flat out around these racetracks. Nobody can get there's no actual racing happening at most of the ovals in particular.
Well, there must be something going on. Now, there must be something going on, or why does Dixon dominate this race like he does?
Well, when they spend $200,000 making mirrors a year, and the thing, and I think we'll all agree on this point, so I'm going to bring it up, is I noticed this weekend, fastest lap, 2:13. That is way too low. Just a few years ago, with the same engines and the same cars, we were doing 220s.
No, they were different engines, weren't they? That was before the ethanol change. It was before...
Well, that's either way, it's too slow. And Honda says, and comes out every year and says, they've detuned the engines to try to make them so they don't blow up and Honda doesn't get a bad name, which is a consequence of one engine provider. And we're not getting into that.
I've never seen Honda say that publicly. I mean, it's obviously...
Well, it's out there, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think Honda's ever admitted to it, and I would be extremely shocked if they did. But the reason that I've heard for the detuning is that they're concerned about these cars going airborne if they go too much faster.
Well, there's that, and they're also... when you blow an engine, there's a good chance you're putting their car in the wall, and that's a big expense to the teams to wad these cars up. And
so
like you said, it's a consequence, and I think Honda has come out and says, you know, that since we're a one-manufacturer league now, our onus has been on safety and reliability.
Yeah.
We're not going for track records.
They're not putting out press releases that are saying that our engines are going to be detuned to not blow them up and give us a bad name. But that's the point of what they're doing is why this is racing. I'm not saying that we should be killing drivers, but there should be a certain element of danger in it. Going 213 is unacceptable. That's NASCAR speeds nearly, because some cars I saw Danica when they had the telemetry on and she was doing sub 200. That is unacceptable.
First of all, the argument that going 213 is not going to kill drivers is completely false, and there are a number of families of deceased drivers that I could have you talk to that would like to have a discussion about that with you. But I agree that the onus is in the wrong place right now, but the only way we're going to solve this problem is to have a new car formula, and they're working on it. So I think that this discussion has kind of been beaten into the ground, and it's a little bit moot until we find out what the iconic committee has in store and what the plans are for 2012, because until then, we can talk till we're blue in the faces, but nothing's going to change.
Steph, I want to add one more thing before we totally get off of this blocking. And I think you and I kicked this around in some emails this week, but what is your view on a driver that's a lap down but behind the leader racing to get back onto the lead lap?
I'm so glad that you brought this up because you and I talked about the fact that I had a great story about this.
Well, I got a good story too.
Yeah, and it does happen. It won't happen with these cars like we just finished discussing because of them being the way that they are. But it has happened in the past where you get a driver who goes a lap down for any number of reasons, and they do have a fast enough car to get themselves back onto the lead lap. Hasn't happened in a long time, but my favorite example, of course, is the race at Homestead in 1996 from a little... A well-known Canadian gentleman by the name of Greg Moore in his very first race in the IndyCar series, kart at the time, of course. And there's a great story in his memorial book. Jimmy Vassar was leading the race at the time, and he sees this blue car come up behind him in the mirrors, and it's just gaining on him so fast. He goes, "Where the heck did this guy come from?" And his team comes on the radio and tells him, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's Greg Moore. He's a lap down. Let him by." And Jimmy thinks to himself, "Geez, I'm glad this guy's not on the lead lap because I don't know if I'd be able to hold him off." And Greg finished that race in seventh place, and the popular opinion was that he didn't lose the race, he just ran out of laps to catch everybody. And that is a great example of where it can happen, that just circumstances will have somebody going a lap down or being far behind that doesn't belong there, and that they just get the opportunity to catch up. But I mean, if you have that situation, then you don't have people coming up behind that car needing to pass anyway, so it kind of doesn't really enter into the blocking discussion exactly. But thank you for giving me a chance to talk about Greg. I appreciate it.
Let me go back 2 years before that. Go back to 1994 at Indianapolis. That was the year that Penske had the new Mercedes that were like 800 miles an hour faster than anyone else. Emerson Fittipaldi just dominated the second half of that race. At about lap 175-180, he lapped Allanzer Jr., who was in second place in the same car as him. So he was ahead by an entire lap over second place. About four laps later, Al Jr. comes back and unlaps himself. So there's about 17 laps to go. And Emerson, for whatever reason, decided he's going to continue to race against Little Al and keep trying to put him a lap down. I think he had a final pit stop coming up because they got like a quarter of a mile to the gallon, which was fine because they all ran 800 miles an hour. So he had a final pit stop coming up. And in his desperate attempt setting up Al to put him back a lap down before his final pit stop, he, for whatever reason, drove into the grass, lost control, and ended up in the turn four fence, trying to put him back a lap down because second place had unlapped him. And nobody at the time thought that there was anything dirty or wrong or unjustified about that situation. If that happened today, hell would break loose.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have everyone complain. It's like, oh, there's no reason for that guy to be running against the leader a lap down. So it wasn't that it was always unacceptable to run against the leader. There have been situations, and it wasn't that the second place car was, you know, clearly faster or dominating or even any faster, really.
Wait a second, though. In that example, aren't we saying that Little Al was trying to stay on the lead lap anyhow, even though he was in second place?
He had already been put down a lap. Emo got by him, and he was a lap down.
Right, so he was trying to get his lap back, though.
He was trying to get his lap back.
So you,
that fits into the example that we were just saying was acceptable.
Okay, I thought what I had understood you were saying, though, is you
no,
can
no,
fight
if you were, if you,
once
well,
you get
can fight
F,
to
though.
Get your lap back, too, but right. if he was doing that with the guy that was in third place, that would be unacceptable.
So there we go. We agree there.
So you agree that the lap down car, a lap down car can come back and get its lap back. That's okay.
Sure, all absolutely. Right. If they've got the car to do it, absolutely. No question.
That just sort of seems a bit antithetical to the whole point.
Show me how often it happens, and we'll talk about
it. Yeah. I'm not saying I don't agree with it. I'm just saying it's kind of backwards compared to what we were saying earlier about the lap cars need to get out of the way.
They need to get out of the way if they're slow.
Right. I don't disagree. I don't disagree. I don't need to
drive fast enough to keep up with the leaders and even get by them. Hey, go for it, because they're not getting in anybody's way.
Yes, that's the key. Get out of the way unless you're quick enough.
Yes.
All right. One last thing before this horse is dead, buried, and starting to decay.
No, it's already assumed temperature a long time ago. But go on.
Let me knock Steph's socks off and address the issue from Kansas. That, although it is a shame, Danica should have not held up Elio through three, four, five laps or something.
Very now, proud of you, Paul.
Before you get too proud of me, let me say, it is too bad because I think she was as fast as Elio. You know, she had some issues early in the race. She got behind because of a poorly timed pit stop. But in that second half of the race, she did have a fast car. So it wasn't like Elio was losing half a second on lap, and that once he got by her, he just blew her away and left her in the dust. She genuinely did have a fast car.
Right, but she had nothing to gain by...
Exactly.
Other than the fact that apparently there was another Andretti Autosport car right behind Elio. I didn't catch that at the time.
Yes, TK was... It went Danica, Elio, TK that whole time. Which makes it probably a little more iffy. But I agree. In that situation, Danica should not have raced Elio. Now, I'm not saying she should have just pulled over and let him go by, but she should have given him every opportunity to make that pass. Mm-hmm. So... I just wanted to declare, because I know you think that I defend her all the time. So there you go.
I'm very pleased.
I figured.
So I think at some point during this entire show, we've all sort of brought back and made a counterpoint to our own argument completely. So
The only one we're waiting for is for you to realize that moving the lap cars out of the restart is a terrible idea.
Well,
I think we might be waiting a while for that realization, unfortunately.
I don't think the three of us have ever conceded a point to each other, so that's probably not going to happen. So.
Yeah, probably not. All right, let's put Kansas.
Especially not when it's a stupid point.
Hey!
Up high.
Anyway.
Never mind. I was going
to
post
this.
Stop now. Stop
let's
now.
Let's put Kansas to bed.
Let's put Kansas to bed and move on
probably
to something.
Probably permanently.
That's
Kansas will never be spoken again.
Bye-bye, Kansas. Enjoy your status with Michigan.
Gar.
But we want Michigan back.
Yeah, we actually like Michigan.
We don't want Kansas back, but we want Michigan back. So let's be nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I would like Michigan back. It ain't going to happen. Let's move on to what is going to happen.
Yes.
Indianapolis coming up. It is officially May.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We are finally here. The track, I believe...
We still have to wait 2 weeks before
yeah,
we
it would be
see
nice
anything,
if we still had a month of May, not a week of May.
Well, no, the track opens in what, 10 days? 9 days, I think? Yeah. Opens the 15th, doesn't it? So that's 9 days away.
16th is the day of practice. So 10
I will be at the track a week from today playing golf. I'm very looking forward to that. I'll be playing with Monica from The Race Girl. I'll be playing with Kevin Lee and... a fourth to be named later. So I'm very looking forward to that. Speaking of Monica, let's
yes,
get
that is
out
a
there
great
first.
Segue into the May Indy tweet up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Steph, why don't you roll with that?
Okay. So the May Indy tweet up, this events start on May 26th, the Wednesday, and run right up until more or less race day, it looks like. People gathering and traveling around Indianapolis as a group. Starting on Wednesday, there's a meet and greet reception. Thursday is the Fanimation Grand Prix, which I'm not going to be able to make it to defend my honor as the last of the best, unfortunately. But
I will be there to defend Planet IRL's honor, though.
Excellent.
Good.
And that is a fantastic event at Fast Times Karting in Indianapolis, which the good people at Fanimation have been good enough to sponsor so that it can be attended for only $40 a person, which is a fantastic price for an evening of fun at Fast Times. So that will be a lot of fun for everyone. And then Carb Day, the track activity, and that night is the Burger Bash with Kirk Cavan at 96th Street Steak Burger. And then Saturday, the group will be attending the public drivers meeting, and we have a block of tickets reserved for the Indy 500 Festival Parade at a reduced price as well. And I think a bunch of us are also all going out to ORP to watch the night before the 500. And then, of course, Sunday is race day. So all of this information, including how to register for the Grand Prix and get your parade tickets, is available at mayindytweetup.wordpress.com. Run, of course, by the good ladies at the Inside Pass, Monica and Elizabeth. And if you get in touch with them, if you're interested in more information or getting a hold of these tickets or passes, send them an email. They'll take good care of you. And do join in. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Very good. All right, Steph, thanks for the winner and the tweet up preview. Let's go over real quick where we are thus far. Big news this week, Paul Tracy, we already knew he was running the third, or is he the fourth? I guess he's the fourth KV Racing
yes.
Technology car this month. Big news is that his race strategist is going to be Barry Green, who of
As
course...
As if I wasn't excited enough.
Really?
That's exciting.
Foaming at the mouth.
See, to me, talk about dead horses. God, this is never going to end. Is this?
And there goes the show, folks.
It's over. Bobby Unser won the 81 race. Ray Haroon won the 1911 race. And Elio Castroneves won the 2001 race. It's over. It's dead. There's nothing more to be gained
first
by dragging
all,
this out every
Go ahead and correct him, Steph. Go ahead.
First of all, it was 2002.
2002. Sorry, you're right.
Second, it's like Paul tweeted, and this was one of my favorite tweets of all time. He's like, he called up Barry and he said, "Hey, Jake, it's Elwood. Get the band back together. We're on a mission from God."
That was a good one.
That was awesome. I so want to see these guys just storm in there and make a whole lot of noise for the whole
month. That would be fine.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that people love to follow. I know I'm looking forward to it.
And the people that have been around since 2002 just don't even listen to them anymore. It's old. It's dead.
Just shut up about it.
Fun.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
It's like reading
Robin Miller's...
talking about it. You lost the race. Go
it's
home.
It's like reading Robin Miller's windbag thing on SpeedTV.com. It's the same thing.
Well, he's not coming on our show
after
again.
Day after Well, Robin puts it, too. He'll tell you that. But it's, you know, we hear the same things. When was the first year Paul came back? 2 years ago? Or was last year the first year?
No, it was two years ago. He raced it up.
Yeah. And it's just, we've heard it every year. Paul Tracy interview is, oh, are you coming back to bury those demons? No, he came back 2 years ago to bury those demons. He lost then, too. Move on.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it any less legitimate for him to come and say, I have unfinished business here, and I'm going to race my butt off all month because I want my face on that trophy.
And that's fine.
Just don't talk about it every single time.
Exactly.
It's been a decade. Drop
it. Up every time, and we don't need to, you know, define him as a former winner of the race, and it's just so old and tired by this point.
Well, you know what? You guys, I'll admit that I'm biased, so I'll take my opinion out of this discussion. You guys have been following this for a long time. People that need to have their attention grabbed from the outside, this is the kind of thing that's going to get their attention. Somebody stomping around, making a lot of noise, saying that he's been wronged and he wants to make things right and blah, blah, blah. That's the kind of sports drama that people are looking for these days. And Paul is, you got to say one thing about him, he's good at generating drama.
Paul is drama.
Give him that. Let's get some new drama.
Yeah, find new drama. Go hit someone. I don't care.
Well, he's
go take somebody
good at
down who does
drama too. So
go pick a fight with someone that leaves their helmet on.
Paul, shut up and close the show out. We're not getting into that argument again. That'll take too long.
All right, let's move on from that because I'm still tired of talking about Tracy in 2002. All right, the other news. Not surprising to really anyone. Graham Rahal will be running for his dad. Nothing really to tell there. For whatever reason, they changed the car number for, what were they? I think they were 17. Now they're
17.
Going to 30. So I don't know what prompted that switch. Just kind of, I heard Bobby say something about his numerology. He had won all three championships with
I think that was Kurt,
numbers divisible by three. And I don't know. It was a whole bunch of, is Graham 21 this year? Something along those lines. I don't know.
Someone read too much into it.
Yeah. Whatever it is, it's not Domino's Pizza coming back, because there would be some irony there that Bobby Rahal would bring back the Domino's livery that smoked him in 1990 when Ari blew by him in the Domino's Pizza car that for Doug Shearson Racing back then. So no one's surprised that Rahal is driving for his dad. Sadder news, AJ Foyt's number 16 ride has apparently been withdrawn. So if Jacques Lazier was looking to get that ride, does not appear that that is going to happen now.
That's disappointing to me.
It is disappointing. Jacques showed so well a couple years ago, I was hoping he would get a chance to perform again. So.
Mm-hmm.
Is he not connected with 3G?
He could be. But I was kind of expecting Richard Antonucci in that ride, but we haven't heard anything.
No, Antonucci is going to be, he's out all May because he's over in Italy racing sports cars.
That's right. That is right.
So, who knows?
I'm still going to, you know, and like I said last week, and this will make Cole happy, that's where I want to see one of the buddies is in that ride. Either a
put Buddy Rice in a car, you idiots!
Well, maybe if he would come
that's
around and
point.
You know, present himself that he's looking for a ride, that would help.
Buddy Rice presenting himself.
Yeah,
that's gonna happen. I can feel it.
And contrary to what Kirk Cavan reported this morning, the AFS ride has not been withdrawn from the entry list.
Oh.
The updated entry list that the Speedway put out yesterday, dated the 5th, dated Cinco de Mayo, with the Graham Rahal in the number 30 car, still had the AFS entry on there. So I don't know what that means. Maybe I'm not hopeful that we'll see that car on track, but it would be nice to see it. Actually, I take back what I said earlier. I think, Steph, I think I said last week I'd like to see one of the buddies in that ride. Since that's a new team, they could really use an experienced...
I want to see anybody in any car, buddy, with B-U-D-D-Y. No.
Right, but where I had gone before is I'm concerned about seeing J.R. Hildebrand.
Yeah, that was the driver ride that was with connected a rookie with team. Him.
Right.
Is that all the main news?
That's all the main news I got. We are looking forward to next week. I will have a... I don't know when we're doing the podcast next week, but I will have a very exciting interview.
Paul has a very, very special guest for us.
That's right. I'll be doing an interview next Thursday that I'm very much looking forward to. So look forward to reporting on that. And if it doesn't make the podcast, it'll make the one after that, I'm sure. So, mm-hmm.
So big month of May coverage coming up from Planet IRL.
Okay, so I guess that's all we have to cover this week. Thank you so much for joining us. On behalf of Cole and Paul, I'm Steph, and we appreciate every week that you tune us in. And remember to follow planetirl.com, where we have your podcast, blogs, photos, and more covering the IZOD IndyCar Series and beyond.